Let's see, can I have a motion to approve the current agenda?
So moved.
And a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None opposed. This is the time for public comment. Okay, there being none, that moves us to discussion action item 7.1, presentation of schematic plans for proposed Bonzo High School flood environmental impact report for the Bird Road property.
Thank you. This item on the agenda, I want to let the board know that Rich Nowicki from Baker Nowicki Design Studio will be taking us through somewhat of an evolution of where we started over a year, almost a year and a half ago, up to the point of where we're at now. And this is a very close but draft copy of the schematic design drawings that we are currently working with to include in the draft EIR. Good evening, everyone. Thank you for this opportunity to present the work we've been doing on the high school project. So just to reiterate a little bit, we'll go through sort of the process that we went through in arriving at the design solution that we have proposed. You all may remember we've presented in the past the meeting process that we went through last summer prior to the bond, in terms of planning, the project criteria and goals for the project. We also took another meeting where we toured another local school that has some programmatic elements that were of interest, and started to develop the program of the building and for the student population that's required. And then we also had a third meeting where we really started to drill down into the educational specifications and the master plan concept for the site. There were a number of people in attendance. It was an open meeting. I believe there were lots of invites that went out in that first meeting, where we came out of that establishing some of the vision for the school through our work with the district staff. Kind of go through this part relatively quickly because we've presented this in the past. And there were some real talk about how classrooms are arranged, maker spaces, collaborative spaces, and some of the emerging trends that educators are asking for, calling for, even in school design. So there was some really spirited discussion about how to arrange classrooms and how we can foster that type of experience. And then we visited the site. And toured it and did a review of an analysis of the site. This is a picture from Del Lago Academy in Escondido and how some of the spaces are working there. And this is all a group from this district that we took through that campus. And afterwards, we adjourned to one of their meeting spaces and started to discuss classroom layouts, site utilization, the vision and goals for the project. Like I said, another image of that, the site planning, we start to really break down what we're seeing on the site and take input from the other members. Some of the people that attended were actually students, and it's always wonderful when you have students in these meetings because they always come up with ideas that, you know, adults are shy to say out loud, and the kids just aren't. This young lady, I don't remember her name, but she was an architect in making. She really had a lot of good ideas. And that classroom diagram that we showed a few slides earlier really has a lot to do with the comments that she was making. So through that, we did a preliminary analysis of the site at that time, and we identified some of the major characteristics of the site, but areas that we thought as architects potentially would result in being designated as environmentally sensitive. We didn't know at the time. But we could see certain things on the property that we were identifying. We also looked at, you know, what parts of the site are developable. You see that down on the bottom, there's a little red circle that says access point, and that's pretty much the only rear place you can get on site, because you see the red line on the curvature of the road. That the curvature of the road like that makes sight lines very difficult, so that's not a good point for access, and we identify where the developable areas are on the site. We also knew at the time that the project was going to most likely be developed in phases, and we wanted to express the concept that whatever we do in phase one has to support the full build out of the campus. And so we're trying to identify a scheme concept where the buildings, in this case in the purple circle, the dark circle being, you know, conceptually phase one, and the lighter circle, you know, how it might grow over time. So the buildings on the north end of the site is the quieter part of the campus. The academics on that side is quieter, so that's closer to where there are residential areas, parking areas being closer to Gerd Road. Also showing how the expansion of parking could work over time, and then the fields on the lower part of the site, if you will, and also expanding towards the golf course to the south. And if there's noise that comes from the campus, it's generally from the fields during athletic events, and so that would take the fields as far away from residential properties as we could get. So as a result of that, we came up with a preliminary scheme. Now, no plans have been developed. We knew that this was a site for maybe for 1,500 students, so we identified through that planning process that classroom buildings maybe that would house 500 students each could be arranged on that northern property. And I think you can see that this master plan is very similar to that previous diagram in terms of where the buildings are, where the parking is, and where the fields are. And this scheme is showing another access point to the north. It's generally considered a good idea if you can do that. It's not necessary. This isn't a 4,000 student campus, so traffic can be mitigated. But what we found out, and it's a little, now at this point in the process, the CEQA consultant has come on board, the biologist is on board. We're starting to see more specific delineation of where there are habitat and areas that need to be protected. The green splotches and the brown and the blue splotches aren't all areas that needed to be mitigated, but at this point in time, they were identified as places that needed to be studied. As you can see, our initial understanding of the site seems to be holding up pretty well at this case. This diagram is not essentially tested against the program yet. It's still a concept. So at that point, then, we began schematic design in earnest. All of that is fairly conceptual, but now it was time for us to get very specific. And one of the nature of the CEQA process is that you're assessing the environmental impacts of the proposed development. And in order to do that, in order to answer the questions that the CEQA consultant is asking of us, we have to get fairly specific so that we can answer questions that will hold up over time. Our answers will hold up over time. And we can have some level of accuracy. If we are not accurate, and reality turns out different as we go through the design process, then your EIR would essentially have to start over, because there'll be statements made that were ultimately found to be maybe not quite, I won't say incorrect, but if we said that we were disturbing 41 acres and the CEQA consultant used that we're using disturbing 41 acres and it turned out that we're actually disturbing something more than that, then that would be a problem for the EIR. So that's how these things have to work in concert. So we started to identify in the schematic design, the green area is phase one, and then the gray areas are the phase two of the full build out of the campus. And you can start to see there, at this point, the delineation of the habitat is getting a little bit more specific. We're still staying good. We had to make some adjustments at the north end. This has been turned to fit the page, but on the north end or the right side, we made some adjustments there. And this is a rendering from our landscape architect showing the full build out of the site. And there's a couple things to point out here. You can slightly see where the habitat areas are there. We're staying clear of those, which is to the district's benefit that there is no mitigation required. We're simply staying away from all the sensitive areas. One thing to note, the entrance point off on Gerd Road on the lower left, you see that road that's basically coming up the hill along the parking lot. It's a little hard to tell at this scale, but there's a divided roadway, and there's one lane coming down the hill, but there are two lanes going up the hill, coming into the site, which would sort of allow queuing in two rows. As it is, there's probably somewhere in the nature of 700 to 800 feet, lineal feet, of queuing space that would take traffic off of Bird Road, thereby minimizing the impacts and allowing most, if not all, of the drop-off traffic to take place off of Bird Road. We heard from the community that this was a concern, and so the design is making efforts to address that. So more recently, this is a further overlay of the campus plan and some of the habitat areas that are designated. The yellow areas are eucalyptus, so they're not to be mitigated. Eric, if I say something correct, please correct me. But you can start to see how the riparian areas and the other areas of habitat are further delineated from the previous schemes, and we, at this point, made further adjustments to the roadway and some catch basins, another thing, to make sure that we're staying out of that area, preserving the district's goal to not contact any of the habitat areas. So in doing that, in order to answer these questions, we designed the facility for phase one. We developed a plan in concert with district staff that identifies a classroom building that would house 13, I got the classrooms, I was trying to do students, can't multiply. 13 classrooms, including maker spaces, and on the upper floor, it's a two-story building, two science labs as well, with three other classrooms. There's a large gallery space, and if we show this in relation to a campus master plan, this building could link to two others just like it to provide the full academic areas for the full build-out. So this is important so that we can accurately depict for the CEQA process the amount of facility that's being produced and the square footages and what the impact would be. There are building sections, which I won't take the time to explain. There's a gym pavilion, if you will, because we're trying to make sure that we can meet the budget for phase one. So there are three PE rooms with a shelter pavilion, if you will, which is an open air covered structure that could serve as a modified gymnasium until such time as the district is able to further fund the project and build a proper gym, which is part of phase two. At that point, this area would become the lunch shelter. So it's not as though it would be wasted construction. It has a use once the gymnasium itself is built. In order to preserve the budget, there will be five relocatable buildings placed on the campus on a temporary basis. Two of which are the PE locker rooms that the high school is using here at Sullivan Middle School now. We'll be moving those over to the new site. And another one will be designated for food service. And then on the bottom, that's the administration plan, which is two portable, two relocatable buildings joined together, and those would be temporary until the next phase, where they would be replaced by permanent construction. The thought process was build permanent construction for the students while you can, and these other facilities can come on later, because maybe not as significant to the education process. So in doing so, we also, through schematic design, developed some character images for what the campus would be. The two images on the top, left and right, are the classroom building. The middle image on the left side is an interior of that gallery, collaborative space inside the classroom building. And then the other two on the bottom are the gym pavilion and PE building. The nature of architectural design contract is that there are three primary design phases. There's schematic design, which this represents. There's design development, which is the next phase that we're going to, and then finally construction documents. The reason I mention that is this is not images or a design concept that The district now has to adopt. This is the process. We've come up with a scheme, we're presenting it to the district, we get your feedback, your opinions, your thoughts, how you feel like this maybe is working within the community and the rural character of the site, which we try to address. And then we'll take those comments along with our development of the technical aspects of the project, and through the design development phase, come back and try to marry the input that we received with the goals of the project. At the conclusion of that phase, we can come back for another review, again, solicit input and commentary, make those revisions as we complete the final documents for construction, and then those will get submitted to the state for approval. So that's sort of the process that we've been through to date. We welcome all comments and input on any aspect of the presentation or the site planning or the design.
Question, the portables that you mentioned portables, putting administrative and food services and the e-lock, I think you said.
Mm-hmm.
What do those look like? Because I know some could be like a trailer looking, and some could be very modern.
There, I don't have a picture of a portable, but there are a number on this campus, and they're sort of your basic 24x40 modular. They're not what we used to call site-built modulars. They're not intended to be on a flush foundation. The idea is that we're trying to preserve money for the permanent construction and provide temporary facilities that don't tax the district too much because those facilities get replaced ultimately later on.
Okay, on that same note then, as you're driving up, you drive up and you're going to be looking at the park, you're coming in, is your first view of it then, is it going to be the classrooms or is it going to be and trying to be conscious of what it's going to look like, and not to say it's all about what it looks like, but it's
No. I understand the question. From Bird Road, when you turn up the site and you start heading up the hill, we don't have any of that, but you probably aren't going to see any buildings at all until you get up under the property. And we did some character sketches that were based on photographs that the board shows that. And perhaps I should put them in this situation, but they have been presented to the board as well. But once you get up to the top of the hill, in phase one, there will be portables in front of the classroom building. The admin wants to be in front of the classroom building to provide security control. But ultimately, go back to that. Not that one. That one. So I don't have a pointer. So this classroom building is the one that would be first in phase one, and the gym pavilion's over here. These are future buildings, administration, NPR, food service, gym, where they can have access for public and service. So these would come in the future. So the locker room facilities and the food services back here was lunch shelter doubling as a gym for phase one, and then the admin building would have to be out here for control access.
Do you have a picture of just phase one separate?
Mm-hmm. And the second question is, as you're looking for that, the foundation for the portables, is that going to be a set up for a permanent foundation so that the classrooms will eventually be rebuilt on them?
No, we wouldn't get into that foundation.
Okay.
You design buildings from the top down when it comes to structure.
Okay.
So until we start with the roof, we don't know what that foundation is going to be. It carries the whole building. So. So this is not a rendered plan. It's a technical grading plan. But here's that classroom building. Here's the PE facility, the three portables, the two locker rooms, and the food service back here. And then the administration building is up here in front near the parking. And there would be what appears to be a large plaza now, but ultimately would be much smaller. There's the dashed line of the future build out.
Yeah,
sorry.
Yes. So to summarize, the schematic design is really to align conceptual space planning with what is available for us to use at that site. the overall developable land that is usable, stays out of environmentally sensitive areas. And from that area, within that area, we came up with a general conceptual only scheme at this point as to how to use that space.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to do that to make sure that we can house our education needs on that space. Yes?
Yes.
And we need to be able to do that so that the environmental impact report can accurately reflect what will ultimately be built.
So the
building design at this point is really purely conceptual. So long as it more or less, I won't even say more or less, it fairly accurately fits on what we're proposing to ultimately develop on the site as a whole.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just so that everybody's clear.
Thank you.
So phase one is aimed at housing how many students?
5 minutes.
Five. So each new classroom, you have 3 classroom pictures, would be an additional 500,
yeah,
more or less.
Yeah.
Okay. And does this complete the requirements for the CCORD for EIR study, or if I'm using the right terminology, for the environmental?
I would refer to the CCORD consultant to,
okay,
let to answer whether or not he's got more questions for me coming down the road.
But in general, yes.
In general, I believe so.
How many students do you have right now? 328.
And building on that, if memory serves, we retained 128 graders from last year's class.
Well, it's a little less than that. Percentage-wise, we retained 48% this year. Last year, retained 38%, so we went up by about 10%. So I would predict 120 for next year, but we were about 100, a little over 100 this year. And then our graduating class is about 50 fewer than our ninth grade class. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So when those seniors graduate, even if we just kept the same percentages this year, we still add a plus 50 next year.
So in 4 years from now, you're anticipating being 480?
It depends on. I would say no, because of the factors of traffic and a few other facility issues.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, kind of piggyback this presentation and marry and show the synergy between schematic design and environmental impact reports. I have Eric Ruby, who I think you've heard from before,
yeah,
from our chief consultant. Yes, sir.
Thank you, Dan. Good evening. Eric Ruby with ESA, the district's CEQA consultant. What I wanted to do tonight was do a quick sort of recap of the status of where we are in the CEQA process and talk, following on to what Rich was discussing, about the importance of having an adequate and comprehensive project description as the basis for evaluation of environmental impacts in the environmental impact report. Just to start off with, the exhibit we have up on the screen right now shows sort of the overall process. The green on the left is where we started with our initial scoping process and our notice of preparation several months ago. We sent that notice of preparation out to responsible and trustee agencies. Several of those agencies have provided input to what they would like to see included in the evaluation in the environmental impact report, and we've taken that into consideration in our technical studies and our drafting of the administrative draft environmental impact report. In the interim, between the time the notice of preparation has gone out and today, we've conducted and essentially completed all of the technical studies that have been required, and that's everything from biological resources, sensitive species, cultural resources, air quality, traffic, noise, all of the typical environmental issues that are evaluated in EIR. And we're currently wrapping up those studies right now, and we'll be folding those into the draft environmental impact report that is proposed to be released in approximately 30 days. End of October, roughly, is what we're targeting right now. So we're in the process of pulling that document together to get it prepared and ready for public review. And we're looking forward to all the public comments that come in on that document. Once those comments are received, they are all responded to in a response to comments document that becomes the final EIR. And that final EIR is what will be before the board for certification at some point, which is probably in the spring, when I'm here at this point. So that's kind of a quick overview. The good news that's come out of all the technical studies is we really haven't come across any major issues whatsoever. All of the biological impact studies and resource studies have come back without having any sensitive species. We've worked, as Richard indicated, we've worked back and forth kind of in an iterative process with the architect and the engineer to make sure that we make some adjustments in the plan as it's coming along. When we get the results coming back in from our biological studies and our technical cultural studies, if there's a little adjustment that has to be made, we're still working on a couple small adjustments right now to make sure that we're achieving our goal of really having no impact to sensitive resources on site. That's really the goal that we're shooting for. If you do impact the resource, then you get involved in a state or federal permitting process, which takes a lot of time and quite a bit of cost, so we're trying to avoid that to the extent we can. And we're at a point now where I think we can say that working back and forth with the architect, that we have a site plan that does not impact any sensitive resources on site, and any other impacts such as traffic can easily be mitigated. So we're in a good spot for releasing the draft EIR at this point. Some of my slides are a little repetitive of Rich's here, and he did a good job explaining those. I'll kind of go through them real quickly. Again, these are the biological resource constraints on the site. Those red areas are red willow woodland, which are considered a wetland out there. The blue areas are waters of the United States as defined by the Corps of Engineers. And any impact to either of those areas would require mitigation and going through their regulatory permit process, which can be cumbersome and can be expensive. So with that in mind, we wanted to work with Rich to make sure that we're not impacting any of those. There were a couple water quality basins that were getting close over there, and we said, look, is there any way we can pull those back? We need to stay away from those areas, and we did. And worked with Rich, worked with the engineer, and we're able to redesign small portions of the site to stay out of those areas. Again, just showing the golf course encroachment there is one of the constraints that Rich has been dealing with in terms of laying out the site plan. Another is drawing phase one, showing how that relates with the access to the sensitive resources on site. Obviously not a problem there. We're well away from the wetland areas, well away from the oak trees that are not quite highlighted so much, but you can see them circled up there on the site. And just again, wanting to go back and make sure that we don't have any impacts to those sensitive resources. Adding phase two into it, again, we get a little bit closer to some of those areas. And again, like I indicated before, we've worked with the architect on this to make sure that we can adjust things as required to stay out of those sensitive resources and be able to determine in the environmental impact report that we do not have any significant impacts. And again, Rich pointed out the access point there. That arrow's a little small, but it's down there in the red. And that really is the one area that you can topographically access the site. And again, it's staying away from those wetland and riparian areas. And just a quick summary of sort of the findings so far that we have. There's a large buffer, essentially, and I'll probably go back and forth a little bit here, provided around the footprint of the development area between the existing residential areas to the north, Gerd Road to the east, and the golf course to the west and south. And again, a lot of this Rich has already talked about, but the sports fields have been located as far as possible from the existing residential areas to minimize noise impacts. Grading is balanced on site. That's important because we don't have to haul any dirt off-site or on-site, which would result in additional traffic, noise, air quality type impacts. All the sensitive resources on site that have been identified are avoided by the site plan. We're avoiding all the state and federal jurisdictional resources, which is a big thing. No state or federally listed species have been identified on site. And we did extensive protocol surveys to prove that up. No Native American tribal resources and impacts. And David, I think you've had all the interested tribes on site and toured them around, and they're all very happy with the way things are going so far. No major geologic hazards on site, no hazardous materials on site. Gerd Road improvements, there is a little bit of work that has to happen on Gerd Road to accommodate the northbound left turn lane into the driveway access. And we're working right now with Rich on some minor adjustments to that to make sure that we're not hitting any of that riparian habitat on Gerd Road as well. North County Fire Protection District, second access is not required. The district's met with North County Fire Protection. They're good with the proposed single access the way it's designed. And we have on-site, we actually have four on-site water quality bases to control stormwater volume and pollutants. So that's a quick recap of where we are. And I guess just one thing to really emphasize the importance of is that we have, I've been here before, an adequate and comprehensive project description. One of the areas in environmental impact reports and CEQA in general, if they are challenged by somebody, is if we have an inadequate project description or a project description that doesn't actually describe what's being proposed. The courts look down on that. So we wanted to make sure that we have as much detail as possible through the schematic design drawings with Rich and the architects that we could to ensure that we have that adequate project description. It's really the baseline for all the impact analysis of that in the environmental impact report. So that's a quick summary of where we are with the CEQA process. And I'll turn it back over to Dave. Unless there's any questions.
Yeah, I actually have one quick question. It's the road widening for the turn lane.
Mm-hmm.
I know that's come up in the community. I've been hearing some questions about that, concerns, questions. Can you address that?
Sure.
What it entails?
Sure. Gerd Road right now has 102-foot right-of-way, which is a lot of area out there. The pavement that's on there today may take up 25, 30 feet, something like that. So there's a lot of room within the existing county right-of-way for that road to be located. In order to accommodate that northbound left turn lane and the existing through lane, we have to add a little bit of pavement to widen that paved surface to allow for that left turn lane to come in. We sort of taper in as we're coming north and taper out as we leave the site. So we're working on the design details. We'll have very specific information on that in the environmental impact report. And then in addition, the southbound Gerd Road will also have a deceleration lane that comes into the driveway, which will also require a little bit more pavement. I think we're looking at 6,600 square feet of additional pavement on Gerd Road, all within the right-of-way.
Does that entail,
it's about 6 feet wide.
Does it entail taking property from an individual, or is that,
right, it's actually county right-of-way that's been in place for quite a while, so it's all county-controlled property, wouldn't involve, doesn't even get close to the edge of the right-of-way.
And so there's no, because I've heard some things that people were talking about that it was going to cut into their own property.
It will not, it's all within the existing right-of-way, 102 feet wide.
Thank you.
So although the district will start with phase one of the project in mind, this CEQA report includes the impact of all three phases. Is that correct?
That's correct. The project description describes the phasing, but the impact analysis takes into account both phases, so we have a worst case analysis.
Is that a time frame on it? Does it have like a 5 year, do you have to go back in after to do anything?
As long as you have a worst-case analysis that's covered, you know, the total size of the proposed project is addressed in the draft EIR, you don't have to go back.
So if it's 20 years from now, and we get to the third phase,
and she gets 600,
we don't have to do this again, is that what you're saying?
Third phase?
Well, look, each building is kind of first, second, third phase, is the way I was looking at it. Is that incorrect?
Well, you have to have it up. I can't say what the scope of the second phase would be.
Yeah.
Maybe it's one building, maybe it's
yeah.
And it depends a lot on the support structure. As program and student load gets bigger, you're going to need more of a lot of different things. Not just the student load. You're going to need bigger happening. You need bigger
offering. I like the two schools you went to. I think I went to the design 39 with you, and I saw you went to the other one in Escondido and Milago. Those are both really nice schools, and they're beautiful. I mean, the community loves the schools because they're just really beautiful buildings, almost like a college. Oh, they are like a college campus. Yes. Something we'd always want to go to. Really nice drawings.
Which is right there. That's good.
Any other questions?
Okay.
Dick?
I'm one of the two, so you don't feel you're being broadsided. I'm one of the two that don't like the Gerd site at all. And you're a businessman, we're lightweight politicians. And As it stands right now, I'd be willing to bet my house on the fact that if we start doing stuff on the GERD property and we go for a bond, we might as well whistle in the bathroom. We won't get it passed. And so I'm looking at that as being a very important thing. You can have all the dreams in the world that you want, but if you can't pay for it, you have a problem. Just a comment.
Any other questions or comments? Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
I have questions. We're not allowed to ask, right?
For the second portion, it's actually a continuation of the Victor and Libby presentation, but it's to help bring information to the board regarding opportunity to participate in the Proposition 51 funding mechanism that the state passed in the last election. And Baker and Whitney have a funding consultant that worked for them and now works for us. Julie Zimmerman has a presentation.
Good evening and thank you for having me this evening. My name is Julie Zimmerman and I'm an education funding principal with Baker and Whitney Design Studio. And my role is to work closely with Dave to navigate the state school building program in order to capture funding for your new high school project. So this slide shows you 10 years, well, excuse me, in 1982 was the first time the state of California put a bond on the ballot. These are ballot measures that appeared before the voters. 1 year in 1994, was a year that the voters did not pass the bond. The last bond that we had prior to this last November was in 2006, Proposition 1D. And you can tell that for several years, we had every 2 years, there was a statewide school bond on the ballot. However, in 2006 was the last time there was a bond measure. And so we did without money for 10 years in the state program. Just so you know, school districts, probably I'd say over 90% of school districts in the state rely on the state bond measure. Districts have to come up with a match, and it's a 50-50 program, so the state provides 50% and the school district provides 50%. So November 2016, we had Proposition 51. I'm gonna be talking with you strictly regarding new construction money. The $9 billion bond measure was Proposition 51. $7 billion was for K-12, and $2 billion was for community college. But of that $7 billion, $3 billion was for new construction. There's already $1.8 billion worth of school projects sitting in line waiting for money from Proposition 51. And again, this is because we went since 2006 without having a bond measure. In 2012, the state actually ran out of money, and so districts continued to submit their projects to the state for funding. I would like to note that when I met the first time with Dave 2 years ago, I noticed a set of construction drawings on his desk, and I said, Dave, we're getting ready to start your baseline and your capacity analysis in the state program. What are those drawings? And he said, well, those are the new Bonzel High School building at Sullivan Middle School. And I said, when are you going to occupy? Because if you occupy your classrooms in new construction before you ask for funding, the state will not provide funding for your project. It was critical. We had to go through several iterations of submitting to the state with California Department of Education. We got plan approval, and we used the DSA-approved plans. And we are one of those projects that's sitting on that list. I believe we're looking at a little over $3 million for this building. So that's good news. At least we're on that list. So how do we get on the next list? This is a process for new construction funding, and it relates to the GERD Road project, because that's where I am in the process at this point. The blue boxes at the top represent Baker Nowicki Design Studio's role in your project. So that's the architectural team. The green boxes represent California Department of Education. California Department of Education has two responsibilities. They approve school sites and they review plans to make sure that the plans meet Title V, which means they need to be certain criteria in terms of size, adequacy, adjacencies, and things like that. The yellow boxes is my role and where I'll be working closely with Dave and William to navigate the program. The blue boxes along the bottom represent the Office of Public School Construction. So they are the funding arm of the state. They're the ones that approve projects and then they go to the state allocation board for apportionment. So right now where we are is pretty much the orange box that I've identified. We have had California Department of Education out to review the school site. And Bedelia came and she actually reviewed about, I don't know, a 5-inch notebook that had documentation for all of the approvals that we've received to date. Department of Toxic Substance Control for a safe school. Geohazards reports, geotechnical reports. We're not located within 2 miles of Fallbrook Airport, so we didn't have to go through special studies. So as soon as we can get the draft EIR certified, then we will be able to submit to California Department of Education for a review and approval of plans. That requires design development drawings from the architect for floor plans, elevations, and site plan. CDE will review those drawings and give us approval in terms of a preliminary plan approval letter. I will continue to update your eligibility for new construction. Your eligibility is based on enrollment. It's a 5-year projection, and then you look at the valid approved dwelling units that are within your district boundary. So working closely with the county, when we submitted Bonzel High School for funding, I got about 882 dwelling units that we could augment our enrollment projection with, and so that's great. After I update the eligibility, we'll be submitting for final plan approval with California Department of Education, and Rich and his team will be working on construction documents and get those approved from DSA. We're thinking it might be sometime around July of 2019 if we're authorized to start construction documents and design development drawings sooner than later. Once Rich is able to have DSA approved plans and I have California Department of Education, I'll be submitting to the Office of Public School Construction. It used to be when you submitted to the state that it would take 6 months to get state allocation board approval and apportionment, which means you could get your money in about 9 months. But right now, because the governor is only having 2 bond sales a year, OPSC accepts the drawings, they put it on the shelf, and probably in about a year, they will notify the district that it's time to update eligibility and they'll start to process your application for funding. So right now we're looking at maybe late September 2020, maybe July of 2021 before we can actually get state allocation board approval of the project. And right now the funding numbers are showing about $9 million from the state, and that again requires a district match. So I guess what I'm trying to say is in order to access the rest of that $1.2 billion, time is critical. We want to make sure that we have continue to have valid approved maps that we can count and look at the enrollment projections as well. So if there's any questions.
So you mentioned that the district has to have matching funds. At what point in this process do we have to show that we have matching
funds? On the gray boxes, it says district has 90 days to issue a notice to proceed and award the project, and at that time, you have to prove to the state that you have the match.
So by your timeline, you're thinking by 2020 somewhere.
Now that's a crystal ball, because we don't know when the governor is up for election. Next year, we may get a new governor that wants to go back to the program the way it was. These green lines, I don't know if you can really tell on the PowerPoint slide, but that's agency approval. Those could tighten up. We just don't know. But this is my best guess.
And you said that you have a $3 million possibility, and we we have to come up today with $12 million bond, or $12 million matching?
No. Sorry. On the $3 million, you've already spent that money because you built the project.
Oh, okay.
So we will show
we
to
are,
the
we
state.
We just get that.
Then. Yes.
Okay,
that will
so
be
that's
a reimbursement,
that's
essentially.
That's the $3 million that we already matched it, and they just have to release it.
Correct.
Okay, so they release that, and then we go into the 9, which would be $18 million.
$9 million that you would have to show, yeah. That you would have to have, and the state would provide up to.
Okay.
The fact that those buildings are already occupied doesn't matter because the application went in before.
Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Okay.
That was that rush.
And that's here.
Those drawings.
Here. That was because the building was here. Is it because of the high school being here? Because we're talking about the property center.
Correct.
And but it's they're occupied here.
Yeah.
Yes. That's okay. That's it. We actually submitted it as Sullivan Middle School to preserve your high school eligibility.
Okay.
For
that's
your,
a little confusing.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Sorry. So this schedule pertains, again, like I said, to the GERD Road project. So if you choose to look at a different property, we'd be looking at additional 1.5 to 2 years just to get through the CEQA process and get to the state.
And then typically it takes, what, 4 years, 5 years to build the school?
Less than 2 years for phase 1.
Phase 1, okay.
Probably 20 to 22 months.
Yeah, we're still looking at that $10 million figure for infrastructure that you can get started?
No. The schematic design has come back. They've been awakening, has given us a draft, as has Harrison Hall. Of course, we'll tighten that up once we get the schematic design drawing completed for the drafting that out. But both companies are indicating the infrastructure where the third road work and infrastructure is around 3.5 million.
But it was 10 at one time. That's
well,
pre-work.
If what we had done is we had put $10 million aside as a budget because we didn't know what we were going to have to do, and things are starting to solidify themselves. So work on GERD Road is much less than we had budgeted for at that time. However, Rainbow Water is indicating that we're probably going to need an additional meter. We have 1 4-inch there, which saved us about $190,000 in water use fixture unit fees. But we'll probably need a 6-inch line additionally for fire service. And we may want to install an 8-inch line into the property so that we don't have to get bigger later when we add the other. But that was not contemplated, even though it was part of the $10 million. All of that has come down considerably over the last 4 to 5 months because through having the environmental protocols come back and being able to overlay that onto the property and missing the things that we had contingency money in for riparian areas. Well, we're missing all the riparian areas, so that money doesn't have to be spent now. So all of that infrastructure and GERD rubber right now is hovering as a budgetary number. Nothing is exact, we don't know exactly where we're at yet. It's around 3.5 million. That's a significant amount of money back in building.
So Dave, we talked about the last meeting, we showed a couple different properties, and some of the properties were quite good, and we liked them, but just the cost of bringing water to the property itself, bringing in that became prohibitive. So this one has water, this has a source of water close to it?
The Gary Road property?
Yeah.
The district has a water meter on the property. So we have 4-inch water meters there that will handle all of our potable needs probably throughout the first 500 student building and some of them and most of the support structures. We will need to add, even in phase one, we will need to add an additional water line. But there's a 12 or an 18-inch water line in GERD Road that you just have off. So you have plenty of water, there's plenty of sewer. The plenty of power from SDG&E. All of the utilities are right out of market.
Well, Aaron, I think some of the other properties had issues with bringing sewer all the way.
Sewer.
How close is sewer to the GERD?
Well, one of the properties that we looked at past year. And it's about 2 point, I think we measured it out, at about 2.3 miles to that particular property, which is the one that's on top of, kind of up on, I don't know, maybe how it's credit, I'm not sure what.
295.
Yeah, yeah. But it's about 2.2, 2.3 miles. I had Erickson Hall, have one of their utility contractors, put a number to it, and he came up with, I think, about $3.5 million for the 2.5 miles of sewer. And again, that is a, what we call a rag, okay? Because you really don't know if you're gonna have to put in a lift station, you don't know what the elevations are, you don't know what the routing's gonna be. It's so rural, and there's so many fields between that property and where this sewer ends. The routing would be at the public utility's discretion, and undoubtedly they would want to require the first user to put in enough, a size big enough to handle all the people that are going to hook onto it later. And that property is next door to, I believe, a party property.
Just one thing, I wanted to restate a couple of points, and then one thing that hasn't come up, Dave, you and I talked about that I think are important and good reminders for everyone, is that the point of that the last time a state bond passed for matching funds was 10 years ago. Okay, that's a long time, that's something to take into consideration. And now we have $1.1 billion left of the money that's available. And the concern, or may create a sense of urgency and something for the board or all of us to consider, is how much longer will that money be available? And what I'm reading is that we need to have all of our projects and plans submitted within about the next 24 to 27 months. If we do not, there's a chance that we will not have the matching funds available. And correct me if I'm wrong on that, or if anyone wants to restate what I just said, but I wanted to clarify that, because that time frame and timeline and getting in line for that remaining money is very important to us.
I think you can rest assured that the other 999 districts of the state recognize that timeline as well.
Yeah.
And the foot race is on.
Right.
David, how close is sewer to Bird Road as a comparison?
Is that permitting? No, because I read a year or two ago that Rainbow put out a moratorium for any new sewer attached. So is that plan in that Rainbow sewer plan, or
is something? I don't know. I'd have to check.
Because it is Rainbow, I think.
Yes.
The problem wasn't the water nearly as much as it was the sewer.
Sure, yeah.
Because Oceanside, they couldn't pump anymore. And that would be a major problem if we get down the road to where we're ready to kick open the doors and none of the toilets work.
Yeah.
Big problem.
Well, thank you, Dick.
Yeah, on that note.
Any other comments or questions? Okay, that brings us to planning. Next regular meeting scheduled for Thursday at 5 p.m. at the Community Center.
Yes.
Yes.
Can you say that again?
Is that what I'm saying? All right. Conclusion, thanks for coming, everybody.
I just have to...